Coffee Conversations about Influencer Marketing is brought to you by Influential, a strategic consultancy that takes the guesswork out of influencer marketing for your brand. We provide much-needed strategically crafted frameworks on how to implement influencer campaigns specific to your brand needs.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Coffee Conversations about Influencer Marketing. Thank you for tuning in again, and as always, I'm Anne, your host. Today, we chat to Wandisile Nkabinde, Head of Media and Digital Marketing South Africa at MultiChoice. We chat to her about content, influencer marketing ROI, and how digital and traditional media should work together. In the past, he's worked for various agencies and direct clients across industries. He has a big passion for media, and that's led him to win over 17 paid media awards in the past 4 years across social media, search, branded content, tactical executions, and integrated marketing campaigns. This is sure to be a goodie. So without any further delay, here's today's episode. Wandi, thank you so much for making time for us today and having a good chat with us. Welcome.
Hi, Anne. Thank you so much for inviting me. It really is a pleasure to have this conversation.
So let's start off with you maybe telling our listeners a bit more about yourself, who you are, and what does a typical day really look like for a media and digital marketer?
Okay, so yeah, I'm Wandisile Nkabinde. So I basically head up the media and digital marketing division within marketing MultiChoice South Africa. And yeah, I mean, I've been on this specific role for about 6 months, 7 months. Yeah, just over 7 months at the moment.
Okay.
Really, really enjoying it. It's been a great lot of fun. Yeah, but I mean, it has its challenges, you know. I mean, it's a content space, so it oozes a lot of creativity. So different types of stakeholders that we work across. But yeah, I've been enjoying it so far.
So, in your opinion, when do you think influencer marketing kind of started catching the eye of digital marketers, and why do you think so?
It's a very interesting question, and there's a lot of scholars who have different opinions when it comes to this.
Yeah, right?
Some people say it comes from as way back as, you know, 500 AD when the popes,
sure,
the kings and the queens would influence people, you know, to buy things like medicine, you know, before
it became
common, you know. But we've seen it where we started seeing the emergence of print media, you know, in the late 1890s, where obviously certain individuals would endorse certain brands, especially from a food perspective, you know. So I think with the emergence of what we term as big media coming up, that's when it became a bit more formalized. But I believe it's something that's been around for ages and ages. I mean, I'd say for my generation, the 80s babies, for me, the Michael Jordan endorsement of the Nike when they had the partnership around Air Force, you know, that is one of the most powerful, and still is for me, one of the most powerful partnerships, you know, in the world, you know, worth billions of dollars, you know. So I think it's something that's just been around. Marketers knew about it for a significant number of years, and I think it's still going to be around, eh?
No, absolutely. And I think that's a very good point that you're making, is that I think a lot of people think influencers have only been around since social media, when in fact it's just gotten a name now, like a formal name. And influencers have been around since the dawn of time. I mean, it was kings and queens and CEOs and prominent figures and communities. Those are all influencers, and they still are. Absolutely, in the 70s, 80s, print media used it a lot, and in formal advertising or traditional advertising.
Yeah.
But with the advent of social media, we saw this amazing rise of the social media influencer.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there was, and still is probably, a lot of kind of different schools on thought on them. Mm-hmm. But as a digital marketer yourself in this space, When did marketers started cottoning onto, ooh, a social media influencer, maybe we can use them in some sort of way to speak directly to our audiences?
Yeah, obviously in a lot of times in the 90s, we had a lot of what's termed, and I use in inverted commas, traditional media, right? And yeah, obviously we saw a big development of digital emerging, and with the rise of that and the rise of social platforms, you know, the choice grew, right? Options grew for a lot of marketers that, okay, wait, I don't have just TV and radio and billboards. I have this thing called digital, and this thing called digital has stuff called social media, and this stuff called social media has et cetera, et cetera. And what are the other clever ways that we can use, you know, to spark interest and to stay out of the clutter, you know? Because, you know, as a marketer, you really invest a lot of your time in trying to stay away from the clutter one, although it's a lot of times very hard to avoid. But
so hard.
It's very difficult, you know, to avoid it. But we're constantly thinking of better ways and clever ways to connect with our consumers, you know. And a big piece of the term called resonance came up, you know, that, okay, you know, or affinity, you know. Tools in media, we used to have like an index, you know, where now you're starting looking at environments where you want to play around, you know, to get people, you're not just chasing reach or frequency. So social, you know, influencers play that part that, okay, look, I mean, if I'm looking for affinity and I'm looking for a level of resonance, you know, what else can I do? Because if Facebook is only giving me like a promoted post, what else can I do? Because here's this great person, athlete or whatever, you know, if they tweet about my brand, you know, I can get equally good reach as well as resonance if I'm a sports brand. So it started quite early as well. And I think for me in the early 2000s, that's when it started to actually spark interest from a social media
perspective.
Okay. Yeah.
Interesting. So that actually leads me very nicely into the next question I want to ask you. Is that there's obviously been quite a lot of debate over the last couple of years about traditional media versus new media, or what we would say kind of digital and influencer marketing as new media channels. Do you think that there's still space for traditional media? And if so, how could the two kind of work together, the old and the new, or the traditional and the new?
Traditional is dead. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I would never.
No. I'm surprised you just said that.
I would never, ever, ever say that. I mean, people that know me, they know that I'm a huge, huge fan of integrated media. I always use an example that you're not always stuck on your phone. As soon as you step out to go see your family or to go see your friends or to go to a shopping outlet, you do drive. You do see a billboard, you know. You do get into an aisle. You do see branding. When you walk into a mall, you do see other things. You do see other touch points, you know. Sometimes you're tired of streaming music in your car. You do listen to radio, you know. Or if you're in a taxi, you would listen to that radio station that's playing on that car, you know, whether it's Uber or it's a minibus, taxis or whatever. So for me, because we're social beings, there will always be room for traditional media. Because the only thing that is very important to take into consideration is what role each channel plays in your communication, right? And that is where it starts to get a bit tricky and where marketers need to think carefully as to what will a billboard do for me, you know? Is it something that will remind a person about a tweet they saw, you know, from an influencer in South Africa, you know? Is it a noting channel? Or, you know, if a person saw something that was posted by Real Madrid around Nivea, like, oh, okay, wow, Real Madrid and Nivea have this sponsorship now. okay, it's a nice influencer partnership. As soon as I get into an aisle, oh, here it is again here on my aisle, you know. Will it make me buy? Then that's a different conversation altogether. But
yeah,
it shows that off and online integration, which I always find very, very important in a marketing ecosystem.
I 100% agree with you. I hate it when people say a channel is dead or something. And I'm like, no, guys, there's space for everyone, all the channels. 100%. It's just how you use them. And they 100% need to be complementary. And I think it's so valuable that you're saying we're not always on our phones. We're not always on social media. We do other things. Humans are complex and we do everything in one day, right? Maybe not in lockdown, but in general, we do. And I also think marketers need to think about consumers kind of need multiple touch points before they actually go into that consideration phase. It's not just going to be one tweet, one billboard, but maybe if it's a tweet, a billboard, and an in-store activation, that 100%. Seed gets planted.
100%. As long as there's a level of consistency in those comms, to just make sure that
people
can link it. But if what you're doing from a social influencer perspective is quite different from your TVC and your radio ad, then it's a bit tricky for a consumer to connect, you know. But if you have a very seamless messaging integration, it makes your job a lot easier, you know. I mean, some scholars are now talking about, because I don't believe channels necessarily die. Channels just evolve, you know. It becomes, you and I were just talking about, oh, influencer marketing has been around since 500 AD or even before that. And even in the 1900s, it's been there. It just evolved, but it's always been there, you know. And any advertising, because some people talk about media from a hear, see, and do perspective, you know. And as soon as you look at it from a see perspective, it's, okay, what do I want people to see, you know? I'm a food product, and I want to entice people in terms of my product and how it looks. Then I start thinking from a see perspective that, okay, they might see it on TV. They might see it on billboards. They might see it on their phones. Okay, this is how I'm going to treat it, you know, from a hear perspective, you know, whether I hear it through a podcast or do I hear it on a radio station, you know, or, you know, you start thinking in terms of those human senses. And what type of feelings do you want to spark? But at the end of the day, there's practically room for every single channel. You really have to be clear in terms of how you use them and make sure that there's an old term when we're back in school called a golden thread across your...
Yes. I still love using that because I too am an 80s baby. So absolutely, and I agree with you that that should be like that cohesive messaging coming through to really kind of cement that seed in people's minds. So then let's talk about types of digital content, right? So in your experience, which would work better or which does work better, especially when you think of ROI? Everyone wants good ROI, right? Would it be a branded social media post that's being sent out, or would it rather be an influencer kind of piece of content that goes out? Which one would give a brand more ROI in your opinion?
What if it's both, Anne? Why can't they have both? Ooh. Currently, we're running a campaign where we're trying to test both, right? An influencer campaign where it's 10 years of Mzansi, you know, and we're celebrating it, obviously, you know, from a channel perspective. And fans of the channel have specific memories, you know, of the channel itself, what it does with them, where it makes them laugh, where it makes them upset, you know, favorite characters and so forth. And we're like, okay, let's get a couple of influencers to, you know, to work with us. First of all, obviously, we would vet them through AI. You know, you don't have to do that manually anymore, actually, or even ask
Thank goodness.
Because you know what, you know, in the internet world, you leave a trail everywhere you go. So
yeah,
let's get the guys that are actually fans, and let's have these guys, you know, post or tweet or do some nice Instagram shots, you know, maybe with something that's playing on the background, or them preparing a drink to watch their favorite show on TV, you know, but something that everyone knows. I mean, if Wandy is forever tweeting about South African idols, the next time I tweet about idols, people know that I love idols. You know, it's not a lie. However, what if then I have an ad unit, you know, that will then say, sign up for DSTV, you know? So if you see this post, it's great. It makes sense. You know that I always talk about it. And there's a call to action at the bottom with a clickable ad where it just drives you to sign up for DSTV if you're interested, you know?
Sure.
But now you're starting to combine not just an influencer talk, but you also integrate your acquisition goal at the same time, you know?
Sure.
And it's in a more believable space because it's a person that has strong resonance to what they also talking about. Because what tends to happen is, you know, if you're a brand that doesn't have great, you know, favoritism or, you know, amongst people, sometimes it really doesn't really work, you know, no matter what you
do,
it becomes a big, big challenge. But people in our case, people love content, you know, people love content. This conversation is content, you know?
Yeah.
So there are ways to combine the two. Personally, for me, my guys know that when we work on strategies, I always look for what I call the hygiene job. My hygiene job is to sell, and that's it.
Correct.
And that is very important. Yeah. I have to sell to make my bosses happy, to make everyone happy. We have to sell. But we also have a brand building job that we need to do at the same time.
Yeah.
So normally on strats, we'd have a hygiene job where it's reach, it's frequencies, it's performance media, you know, it's click, cost per form starts, you know, leads, you know, cost per acquisition, yeah. You know, all this blah, 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 blah. Here's a campaign idea, a beautiful creative campaign idea. How do we then start to interpret it from a media perspective? And then that is where we have to look for nice nuances like influencer marketing, any tactical things that you want to do on any channel that you want to make use of. So I think there is a room for both because you can't just share, sell all the time. You also have to build a brand as well at the same time while you're doing that.
100%. So I think very important what you just said is when you want to do a brand job and you use influencers who are relatable, they're authentic, like say using the brand fans who's already watching these amazing shows to talk about it. That's where people find that resonance, like you say, and where people find it relatable. And then we'll get the engagement and we'll then click on those links. Amazing.
No, I mean, if Anne is a huge fan of tennis, it makes perfect sense for me to talk to you regarding tennis. You know, it makes sense for me to have you talking to SuperSport, you know, and find ways to have our acquisition or retention or whatever it is that I'm trying to do because Anne is a fan of tennis as an example.
So now you've just told us a bit about this campaign you guys are running, which sounds wonderful, by the way. And I can't believe Mzansi has already been on for 10 years. It feels like it's been much shorter than that, to be honest.
No, exactly.
So why did you guys decide to use influencers on that campaign? Was it for that relatability for other people?
I always say people follow content and not necessarily channels, you know. And as long as the content is amazing, I don't want to mention names, but, you know, I remember reading an article on one of the biggest podcast deals around $400 million, some crazy numbers like that. I forgot, or $100 million.
Sure. That wasn't me.
Hey, I thought it was you actually.
Maybe one day when I'm big.
Yeah, it will get there. It will. I've got no. I've got confidence that it will happen. But I forgot the guy's name.
Thank you. Sorry.
But it is the biggest podcast in the world,
wasn't it? Joe Rogan.
I think I don't know. Sorry,
I think just read that.
And he cut this deal where obviously he's moving his podcast from I think YouTube and making it exclusively on Spotify, you know, and it will actually have video, which is interesting because Spotify, last I checked, doesn't have video capability. So it's crazy that they
that's interesting,
you know, going as far as doing that. So, you know, we in a space where we know, you know, on my end as well as the team that I work with, that content is king, you know.
Yeah,
it's very important. I mean, for example, DSTV, you know, contrary to what some people would say, you know, against some of our competitors, if you start to look at who normally trends almost every week, whose content trends every week, you can just go on Twitter and check, you know. I was looking at some of the research from YouTube and start looking at some of the most searched key terms, you know, within YouTube, and just check which key terms are sitting there within the top 10. You're going to find contents like, you know, the queen, you know, it's by some of the stuff that we have. So people are searching, people are talking. The fact that it trends, it means people are talking. So it made perfect sense for us to look into that space, but to also make it as seamless as we possibly can. I wouldn't allow the team to just have influencers who just tweet, "Happy birthday, Tenors from Zanzi." Sign up to this email. You know?
And you might as well put a branded ad out, honestly.
Exactly. Yeah. So for us, it was a lot easier because people just naturally talk about our content on social platforms.
So what was your objectives for this campaign specifically?
The first one, obviously, you know, you'd normally have like a hierarchy of objectives. I mean, the first one was awareness, making people aware that we're celebrating 10 years of Mzansi. And then the secondary one for this specific campaign was to drive acquisition as well as retention. You know, looping people into our spaces, you know, sign up for DSTV. And then from a retention perspective, you know, playing that nostalgia space, targeting people that are within our platforms or within our base, rather, and targeting some guys that have left us, because we have a very strong data management system, you know, where we pretty much track and can see when people join, leave, and when they move around subscriptions. So we're able to know where people are and plan accordingly.
Do you think influencers worked on this campaign for you when you look at the results?
Well, it's too early. So my team was my team was briefing them literally last night. I don't know, it's a test. I promise I'll come back and let you know. But it is a POC. But I have had really, really great campaigns using influencers. My biggest one was when I looked after KFC a couple of years ago on the Soundbite campaign. I think
that was a great campaign.
Yes, thank you. I think between Clue. Together with Ogilvy and Mindshare, we all really worked hard on that one. You know, we knew we had a very strong proposition to offer to the youth. But the challenge was, you know, when creative are like, oh, here's a creative, here's the KV, oh, it looks beautiful, oh, here's the landing plan, everything. Then they were like, okay, one day, so how do we launch it in media? And, you know, you know, to be honest with you, and it's things you learn through years, you know, my first revert, my first strat was big media, big billboards. high-reaching radio, high-reaching TV, you know, 80% this, you know. And then I remember the CMO at the time was like, Wandy, do you really think the youth is going to believe into this the way you want us to show up to the world on it? You know, when they bomb you on your strategy within the first three slides? And you know,
when it's so disheartening.
And it is. And, you know, when I went back to, and at the time, my boss was Zintle Botha, who's currently at ABN Bev. You know, she said, you know what, Wandy, give them the truth. I mean, if the guys are asking to land this as credibly as they want, then give them that. Mm. And I went in there with this. I had no idea it was going to work. I had no clue. I literally went for a social media-led strategy. And I said,
wonderful.
We're going to go. We're not going to brand ourselves. And we're going to launch this thing. And we're going to get people talking about it before we even launch it. Let's get people talking about it. Because it was like a music charts thing that we created for unsigned artists. Yeah. I said, let's get the young guys in Bram, Hatfield, you know, in areas in Cape Town talking about it. Because I know when young people talk about stuff, you know, the others want to know what is it that we're talking about. And then it starts to drive that movement that, well, I've never heard about it. What is this thing, you know?
Like, what is it?
And what they're talking about through. So, and I made use of nano influencers. And then we built it up to micro influencers. Then we built it up to the macro influencers. So it really started with the guy that has like 500 followers tweeting about.
Love it.
So they were tweeting about, we said, look, here's a platform. Can you guys just tweet about the music? Don't tweet about KFC, tweet about music. And that's all they spoke about, you know? And we planned it where the micro influencers would start picking it up. Then we started having macro influencers picking it up, you know. Then we started having TV guys talking about it. It's like, hey, did you see AKA tweeting about this? What is this? You know? So it was all orchestrated and planned out. But you know, that campaign, I can't even remember the numbers, you know. I don't know. I won awards that I can't even remember around that year.
Wonderful.
From a sales perspective, you know, the products we had there was the Streetwise 2, did very well. You know, even the traffic to the platform itself did amazingly well.
Yeah.
So it that for me was a big one from an influencer perspective.
Most of you know that Influential is our podcast sponsor. But did you know that my co-host Anne heads up the agency? And that is the first ever boutique agency in South Africa that specializes in developing strategy for influencer marketing. Anne and her team are experts in the field and have spent years honing their skills and knowledge about influencer marketing and at some of the country's biggest PR and media agencies. The moment that you think you might want an influencer campaign, make sure to call or email them first, because without strategy, it might not have the outcomes that you would like and are looking for. In addition to talking all things influence on this podcast, and also puts together the fantastic Influential newsletter that comes out every month. And this is another way for you to keep up to date with the industry. The link to latest newsletter is in the show notes. Check it out. And if you like, please subscribe. And contact details are also on there. Let's keep the conversation flowing.
I just want to say your boss gave you such great advice, and I'm sure that's a piece of advice that stuck with you, like still in your career today. Like, be honest, just like do what your gut says.
Be honest, do what your gut says, you know, because you...
And also research. Sorry, no, not just gut, but research as well.
It must be informed. It must be informed, you know.
Absolutely.
But you know, the best roads are the one that don't have a trail. You know, you just need to
hit
those roads, and you just never know what you might discover. And I was very clear that, look, you obviously have to build a case, you know.
Sure. A
very, very solid case, and let them know that, look, I believe it's going to work. Because, you know, when you're strategizing and you're presenting, you know, my days was, if you are not believable as a presenter, how do you expect the CMO to believe in what you're saying?
Oh, yeah. You need to buy into what you're saying before anyone else does.
Yep. It's like you're putting your career on the line, and that's what I did, and it paid off.
That's amazing. And I also think it was also such an amazing campaign because you strategized it so beautifully. It wasn't just, let's use influencers and there you go. No. It was meticulously planned out.
No, you and I keep saying to people that you can't just have an influencer campaign. Okay, you can, you know, but it helps when it's supported. You know, you and I were talking about offline and online media. It helps when it's supported by, because we technically had some programs on TV. You know, we had bloggers that would speak about what the guys are tweeting. You know, kind of like a blogger randomly starting to talk like, did you hear about Wandy and Anne's interview? Sure, he said something crazy like this. What that does, it gets other people to want to see this interview, you know? You just put a couple of things around just to get people and drive them into one space.
I love it. So that comes to my next question. When you're looking at influence marketing partners, so the agencies that you kind of entrust into implementing and overseeing your vision, what are you looking for? What do they need to be able to report on for it to add value to you and also your clients?
Look, on my end, it's you must know your product quite well. You must know what you're selling quite well. You know, I think in this industry we do have a combination of, and I think a big part of it is busyness. But it's you must know the influencers you're selling to me, you know. You must understand the brief that I've put into place, you know. And sometimes I wish I was in a space, you know, I put out an influencer brief a few days ago, and it's mainly focused on music. And I started wondering, you know, and one of the guys that I briefed to is a former musician, and he's one really got what I was trying to get to. And I realized the other guy struggled a bit, you know. And, you know, I started to wonder that, can you be a jack of all trades? Can you be a media owner that is selling influencer marketing for everything? Or can you specialize in influencer marketing around sports? Or can you sell influencer marketing around comedy? Or, you know, or I don't know. I'm not saying... But it started to make me wonder, because I love to partner with people that get it. I love to partner with people, when I say micro influencers, they know what the difference between that and the nano guy. Because I've had media influencer, media owners who are blatantly say, I'm looking for micro influencers. And they would, I'd look at the list and I'd see guys like Questa or, you know.
Oh, wow.
Guys who... If I was not a marketer that also knows the culture, and I say the culture in inverted commas, meaning the hip hop and music culture very, very well, I would have missed it, you know? So, you know, in reading the list, I'm like, no, but guy, this guy is a big celebrity. He's an A-lister musician in SA. And they never
got it. Definitely a macro.
And it was after the third invert where I said, I felt, okay, you just don't get it. So for me, that's one, know your product, know your influencers quite well. Two, make it seamless, make the briefing very seamless, make it, the reporting is very, very important. And give me a business solution, you know. I know I came to you with a marketing or rather a communications media brief, but I love media owners that come back to me with business solutions.
I also think, to add to your point of when you put out briefs and people kind of come back to you and they don't really get it, I do think that if some agencies use really clever tech, that if the brief was clear enough, I could give you exactly what you want, even if I'm not an expert in, say, music. I could literally take what you're looking for, cross-reference it, and there's my micros, there's my mid-tiers, there's my macros, and kind of take it from there. And I do believe that it shouldn't stop there. You shouldn't just feed things into an app or a piece of tech and it spits out. But then it's also up to that agency or that account manager to then go and actually look at every single one of them and go, you know what? This guy does fit the brief better than this guy, you know? Because computers are also computers. You need that human interaction as well.
Yeah. No, you're 100% right. A brief. I'm glad you said that. A brief is everything. Because us as marketers, sometimes we get so busy and like, hey, and give me an influencer, propose influencers. I've got this campaign. I'm launching this. Please go. I didn't tell you what the messaging is. I didn't tell you what else I'm doing. I didn't tell you the budget. I didn't tell you what other collaterals I have. I didn't give you anything. So, look.
Also, what's your objectives? Like, what do you want from them?
Even better, what does success look like? You know, we as marketers, we do have that problem. And yeah, I mean, you're 100% right. It really does start with the brief, you know, and...
Yeah. And, but I do think there's also value in saying make it seamless. And like you should have a briefing template that you can give to your marketers or your clients that is easy to fill out. Like just boom, boom, boom. Yes, 10 points. Just fill it in for me and I'm getting on it. I'm not expecting you to go and sit and write an essay for me of what you want this to look like. It's much easier.
Yeah. And sometimes, you know, it doesn't have to be we can get into a quick Zoom call. Or quick Skype, you know, and saying, okay, I know you're busy. I've got the form. I've sent it to you. I just want you to answer a few things for me. One, and then the media owner quickly types it out, you know, and records that Zoom call. You can even do that because I understand that we're busy, you know, that there's so many other things that we need to look after. So sometimes a tiny little social, you know, we would see there's a tiny little thing on the corner there. We don't have time for that. But, you know, I think I'll suggest media owners to be quite clever in terms of how they can get information from us.
I 100% agree. And sometimes, like you say, it's a small thing, but it ends up being a huge thing for your clients because you just quickly, maybe Wendy likes to communicate over WhatsApp. I'm just quickly going like, hey, Wendy, 2 seconds, just quickly let me know what's this. Or if you want to do a quick video call, it's going to take you 5 minutes. And there you go.
100%.
So then let's also chat about user-generated content. I think in the marketing world and our world, we know that it works very, very well. Just a quick one for our listeners. Can you maybe explain to us what user-generated content is and also why it is so powerful?
User-generated content is content that's being created by organically, by the fans, right? Or let's call it a normal person on the street, you know? Me taking a selfie video with my friends, talking about our amazing holiday in France or, you know, in Nigeria, that is user-generated content that maybe we could send to SAA. So, yeah, I hope I gave it its most layman term as I possibly... And does it work? Look, I think SA is getting to a space where I know when I first started in my career, I had a lot of, I used to question it a lot because it was, do South Africans enjoy taking videos of themselves and just putting it out there for everyone to see, you know? And I think with a lot of social media platforms growing and the world getting smaller, I won't even talk about touch the topic of TikTok because everyone knows because that it's literally a user-generated content hub. You know, as South Africans, we're getting a lot more comfortable, you know, putting ourselves out there, you know, which is amazing for marketers. Yeah. You know, it means people are not now, they're not so shy when I do a campaign around doing user-generated content as a build-up to a Pirates and Chiefs match, you know, and I would, you know, flight it from a DSTV perspective, you know, get people to send us those stuff. It's natural and it's stuff that people do nonetheless and they can have a lot of fun with, you know. So it's growing. I think it's still at a very young space. I don't put myself out there that much, you know, from a... I do put my content out there, but you know, I think with time, people will get a lot more comfortable and you'll start seeing a lot of advertisers making use of it. But personally, as a marketer, I get a bit nervous you know, making use of user generated content. Because I always say to the guys, well, first, your campaign needs to be very cool for people to jump in and create content for it. There needs to be an incentive sometimes for them to do it. You know, there has to be a few reasons that you need to put in place for people to go out of their way and create the content for you.
No, I agree with that. Do you think that influencer content falls into user generated content category?
Yeah, 100%. Because I believe anyone can be an influencer. You know, because it's just an art of, you know, manipulating people's behavior. So I could be a person with 1,000 followers. You know, on my Instagram page. You know, but you know, whenever I post food or talk about stuff when I'm cooking, people engage a lot. You might find that people engage on my page with 1,000 people more than they do on a Unilever page when they post their stuff around what's for dinner, you know?
Correct.
So it really can be anyone. I don't think there's a term that needs to be that you are officially an influencer. I think everyone of us, to a certain extent, are influencers.
I agree with you 100%. I know that you said you're a little bit nervous when it comes to using user-generated content in your campaigns, but is there one or two ways you can maybe give our listeners how they can use user-generated content on their social media channels that could maybe support their own brands a little bit better?
No, make sure that, I mean, the very strong resonance to what your creative platform is to those influencers that you're approaching, you know. If you're running a music-led campaign as a brand, it's easier to approach people that are naturally music commentators. Or if you're doing something around makeup, as an example, and you're a makeup brand like a Revlon, it's a lot easier to approach people that, you know, naturally do that. So if you've noticed in the past 40 minutes of us chatting, I strongly believe in resonance. You know, and selecting the right people rather than chasing reach. And marketers, when you're selling it to your exco or whoever, it's a case of explaining to the guys that this is not, I'm not promising big reach on this one, but it's gonna land us quite well from a resonance perspective and land the positioning that we want to land.
100%. So on that note then, how can brands kind of generate or stimulate that user-generated content?
Think it through.
Yes, if we take one thing away today, guys, just think things through.
Yeah, think it through. It's not going to happen by itself. You're not going to go viral by itself. Marketers, I always say, guys, come back down to earth. You know what I mean? I mean, it's come back down to earth, be a normal consumer, you know, let's just be real. But put your position in a very, very good place where you're giving it the best opportunity to succeed. It's kind of like as a parent, you're taking your child to your best school. It doesn't mean they're going to be successful, but you're giving them the best possible opportunity to succeed. So even with the user-generated stuff or influencer marketing, you need to give it its best opportunity to thrive. The chat we had about that, about Soundbite, it was given an opportunity to thrive because a conversation that was held with your channel O was, guys, we are tweeting. You guys for TV, you must talk about what we're tweeting. Went to MTV, guys, we are busy tweeting and this guy's going to tweet this. Please, guy, can you screen grab what he's going to tweet and talk about it? Bloggers, same thing. Billboards, driving. So if you give everything else that you're doing, you're driving it into that one place. Like if you are driving your comms to this influencer piece or social media piece that you're doing, then you're giving it its possible opportunity to succeed. Because if you're doing user-generated content, people won't just do it. You need to make them aware that they should create user-generated content, you know? And sometimes social media alone won't work. It means, oh, okay, look, I might have to partner with this guy because he's at a radio station. Mm-hmm. Let me get him talking about it and asking people to do it. Let me speak to these guys to get them to also do it. So as I said, give it the best opportunities. Think it through. Draw it up. You know, you don't have to have pretty slides. Me, you know, my strats, I always have them on sketch before they sit on a slide. Okay. And it makes it a lot easier. Hence, there's a term called journey mapping, you know, consumer journey mapping.
Yep.
You need to think of those things to give it a best shot.
I absolutely love the analogy of sending your kids to a good school. Doesn't mean they're going to succeed, but you're trying.
You're just giving them the best possible opportunity to succeed. But at the end of the day, they make their own choices, you know?
Absolutely. So during lockdown, we've seen so many articles talking about this is the end of influence marketing. It's going to die. Do you agree with that?
No, no.
Yes. I was hoping you'd say that.
No, it won't. You know what? It can get easily watered down. Because as I said, we, as marketers, we're getting lazy. People are becoming confident in their positions in agencies. People just don't want to work, you know. sometimes people are not paid enough to work, you know.
There's
an IMC happening today, and one of the speakers spoke about you can't expect your guys to give you kick-ass executions if you're not paying them enough, or if you're not giving them the best environment to thrive, you know? So look, there's a big human element to this, you know? So if the briefs are wrong and we end up briefing people and they're just tweeting and they're just taking your money, one, the influencers don't care. They don't take it serious because they're like, oh, these brands.
Yeah, that's true.
They're just giving me money. I'm just going to tweet. So it's meaningless. Media owners, the same. They're trying to get briefs. They're not getting briefs. They end up being like, hey, we also have overheads to pay for. We'll take your money.
Mm-hmm.
Marketers, hey, I don't have time, guys. I really don't have time. I've got to answer to Exco what my go-to market is. Guys, just move. Just tweet and send me a screen grab. Then what happens is that a consumer starts to see all these tweets that are meaningless. You know, they see celebrities tweeting things that makes absolutely no sense. Where they're like, oh, I can see that this thing is branded. Because consumers are a lot smarter than us. They can see right through.
Yeah. The people,
you know? So people start seeing that and it starts to water it down. It doesn't mean it's dying or it's dead, you know? We just need to, you know, find a way to just avoid such circumstances.
I love that you said that because it is so, so true. I always say there's so many brands and so many agencies doing influencer marketing right, and you can see it, and it's amazing. Mm. But for every one amazing campaign, there's three or four that is exactly what you just explained.
Yeah.
Don't really get the brief, don't even know what they're doing. Just get a couple of their friends who happen to be influential to like post a couple of things. And it just, it kind of looks like, oh, you know what, influencer marketing is getting a bad name.
Yep.
But then once you start drilling down, you're like, actually, no, there's so many amazing things going on. Yeah. And during lockdown, since all of this started, people are spending so much more time on social media, trying to connect, trying to distract, trying to get information, that this is where people's audiences now are. Like, get your consumer. This is where you need to go.
Yeah. And, you know, the art of influence is it keeps evolving. I mean, I just want to say shout out to Chicken Licken's latest ad, which literally they looked at all the influencer posts and memes that we've been seeing around the country during COVID. And they made an ad out of that, you know? That is the power of, you know, what you as an influencer, the content that you're putting out there, and the influence that it has to society, you know? And all they did is just took a couple to make one seamless story to tell a COVID story, you know? So there's plenty of room. I think people that say are dying, they're just looking at it and blatant. I mean, the chicken licking example that I just made to you is born from influencer, you know, marketing and content curation.
And I also feel like because all those things that we're using were so all over social media and the memes and things that it again came back to that relatability, that resonance that people have been seeing around. And that's why it stands so well and everyone's been talking about it.
Yep.
Okay, so Wendy, we had our second last question. Thank you so much for your time. So insightful. So let me ask you, how do you foresee influencer marketing and digital marketing kind of work even closer together over the next year?
Look, for me, I think we are on a space of machine learning and a lot of brands have DMPs in place, you know, especially the e-commerce brands and some of the companies that are not so big on e-commerce. So, you know, we're getting into a place where the entire ecosystem is going to plug into one space, you know, where we can start to predict consumer behavior and not just ask them. Because, you know, sometimes being able to predict what Anne's behavior for me is more powerful than having to ask her, because you will not always be honest with me, or sometimes you are not conscious of some of your actions, you know. So I think with machine learning and where we're moving from a digital point of view, we're getting to a place where everything is literally going to be plugged in. What influencers are talking about, who engages with that type of content, when they engage, what lifestyle or life phase they in. You know, I am a father to a young child, and I'm very conscious in terms of the content that she's consuming and who she looks up to and so forth. So all these things, it's one plugged in ecosystem where there's a big place for everything. And for me, it's a very exciting space to be in. I was asking my friend Prince Ndlovu, who's currently looking after Sanlam at Sanlam, that, my guy, 10 years from now, do you think the positions we have are going to be existing, you know, or are we going to have, will they be existing? Or, you know, the world, if you look at the Chinese, they live in a world of being able to predict human behavior. And that is how they start to try to manipulate your actions, you know, which for me, I don't think it's a bad thing. I mean, if you can see my behavior and you can predict what I like, then so be it, you know. But I think as marketing, I mean, you know, for me, it is what it is. As long as you're not trying to take advantage of myself and just give me ill things, you know, that would harm me, then we have a problem. But yeah, I mean, to answer you, for me, that it's just that one integration and connectivity through machine learning. And I think it's everything just plugged into one space where we can start being able to just to predict human behavior and start to give them more meaningful messaging and product offerings.
Absolutely love that. I hope that comes true. That'd be amazing. So Wendy, we've come to the end of our very insightful conversation. Thank you so much for your time. Maybe tell us where listeners can connect with you online if they want to learn more about you.
I actually closed my account on LinkedIn literally probably like 2 months ago. So you can find me on LinkedIn, but I am on Instagram, Facebook mainly. That's where I'm active. It is at Wandiful for Instagram and Twitter, which is WANDIFULL. So it's at Wandiful. And then on Facebook, it's actually my name and surname, Wendy Sile Nkabinde.
Wendy, thank you so much for your time. And I'm sure we will pick your brain again, especially after your recent campaign that's running or starting to run now on DStv.
Yeah, also, man, it was great talking to you. Thank you so much for inviting me. Time flew. I really enjoyed it.
Me too. Thank you so much, Wendy. Have a fantastic afternoon.
All right. Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.